You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East beat reporters. We're looking at Ubaldo Jimenez, Kevin Gausman, and Manny Machado when we talk Baltimore Orioles. Take a look at the Red Sox and their pitching coach change, what they may do to get that rotation sorted out, and the big move demoting Alan Craig and calling up Jackie Bradley Jr. With the Rays, we'll be looking at all of those pitching injuries. Alex Cobb, Drew Smyly, the rehabbing Matt Moore, and the suddenly struggling Chris Archer. Taking a look at the Yankees' rotation and talking a little Brian McCann. And with the Blue Jays, we'll be taking a look at all those injuries and the struggles of R.A. Dickey. Ian, one of the oldest sports cliches is you can't fire the players. It's actually not entirely true in baseball. When you've got a minor league system, you can, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the first change came as a result of the struggles of the Red Sox rotation. It was pitching coach Juan Nieves. I mean, the sort of knee-jerk is, what, did they think he was going to turn these guys into Cy Young winners? And obviously they didn't. This is a patient organization and not an organization that tends to operate emotionally. So this seemed like kind of an odd decision. Was this just a matter of scapegoating, or was there really something that wasn't working with Nieves?
No, I think there was really something that wasn't working. Look, they weren't looking for these guys to be Cy Young. They were looking for these guys to have a 3.5 to 4 ERA, not a 5 or 6 ERA as most of them have. And they just felt like, for whatever reason, Juan Nieves wasn't getting the most out of his staff. And look, none of these guys have really even pitched up to their track records. Forget about not being aces. And I just feel like they didn't think that there's a lot of positive reinforcement coming from Nieves. Of late, they thought maybe he was getting overly down on the situation and the group of pitchers he had. So they just feel that they need a new voice the old new voice thing to come in and maybe shake things up a little bit.
They're obviously not going to throw anybody under the bus and not going to spend a lot of time saying, well, here's why this guy was lousy. But is there anything as far as game planning or prep that they think is going to be better with somebody new? Or is it really mostly, as you mentioned, the sort of communication and kind of mental approach side of it?
Yeah, communication, mental approach, and sometimes you just need a little bit of a shake-up to hold guys more accountable, unfortunately. And look, the other really underrated aspect here is, Christian Vasquez came to camp as the Red Sox starting catcher. When that failed, Ryan Hannigan was the starting catcher. Then the next thing you know, both those guys are hurt, and you're looking at a young Blake Swihart, who they would have preferred would have rounded out his development a little more at AAA, and Sandy Leon, who hasn't played much Major League Baseball at all. So I think that the combination of the catching situation, I don't think that should be understated either in terms of how that's impacted the pitching staff. So maybe they just felt like they needed a little bit more of a proactive voice. Somebody's going to be a little more hands-on in Willis to sort of handle not just the pitchers, but the new catching staff as well, and game calling and some of those things. So it's just been a lot of kind of unforeseen things that have happened to the Red Sox here early in the season.
It was an unusual move to bring in a guy in season from outside the organization. Do they like about Carl Willis, and how did that kind of come together?
Yeah, no, he's a guy that John Farrell knows pretty well from their days in the Cleveland organization. He knows his philosophy, and Carl Willis has had a lot of success with some of the younger Cleveland guys in the past. Obviously, they talked to Terry Francona quite a bit, and Terry was very high on Carl Willis also. So I just think that he thinks he sort of speaks their language, and he's on the same page as John Farrell, and that that will kind of help ease the transition. They feel he's a guy who's going to really study hard to get up to speed quickly. And if they thought there was a guy in-house who was ready to step in and do the job as pitching coach, they probably would have gone that route. But they didn't see that guy out there, and they really saw Carl as the best available guy out there. And they were happy to be able to get him.
The first intriguing transaction on the pitching side was not something to do with the rotation, was calling up Matt Barnes. He's somebody we talked about in spring training. He's an interesting arm. How exactly does he fit in with this big league roster right now?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox need some more hard throwers in the back end of that bullpen. And Matt Barnes is a guy that they've identified recently. They think he might be better in the bullpen than as a starter, the way his stuff plays. And you really saw it in Oakland on Monday night, where he was just throwing some overpowering stuff there in the in the 10th and 11th inning, and they just feel that his learning curve will be easier as a reliever than as a starter, where he's worrying about three or four pitches, and now he can just worry about one or two, and they just really need an arm like that. I think that he could really become an important part of this bullpen in the coming weeks.
If things don't improve, and Andy Kastrovitz had a very interesting piece on RedSox.com today with reasons to think that they will improve at least somewhat, but if they don't improve, and I know we've talked about this, but barring an external move, and I'm sure they're looking at it, what's the likelihood of an internal move? What's the likelihood that at some point we see a starter come up from the minors and take one of these guys' spots?
Yeah, it's a very real possibility that that could happen. I think that, you know, a couple of these guys are sort of they're on a tight leash right now. And I'm thinking of two guys in particular. I'm thinking of Justin Masterson, who's pitching tonight in Oakland, and I'm also thinking of Joe Kelly. I mean, they've just kind of maddening inconsistency from both of those guys of late. You know, you really can't do anything with Clay Buchholz, Matthew. I mean, Clay Buchholz is going to be in this rotation for better or worse, for good or bad. That's just, you know, he can't really serve a purpose in any other area. But Justin Masterson's on a one-year contract, so they could either move him to the bullpen or at some point just designate him for assignment and swallow the rest of that money. Joe Kelly's got a really nice arm, and we've talked about this online and offline or whatever. And, you know, he's a guy who, if he can't get it together as a starter, I mean, like Matt Barnes, this is a guy who I think could be a dominant reliever. I mean, you're talking about a guy with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, he's got a lot of good stuff. He just, whatever reason, he's having trouble putting together a whole game plan as a starter that's going to help him get through a lineup 2 to 3 to 4 times. So I think that Joe Kelly really needs to get it together quickly if he wants to stay in the rotation. Otherwise, I think you're going to see him in the bullpen. You could see the Red Sox call up and Eduardo Rodriguez or somebody like that, or Brian Johnson. They have a couple lefties down there that they like. And, yeah, I think that some of these guys are on a very tight leash. The Red Sox can't go on any longer getting minimal innings and not great performances from their starting rotation.
And that's sort of the second part of the question. You know, part one is, when do they do something about the guys who are struggling? But to me, part two is this interesting second question where you've got a guy like Steven Wright who's sort of somebody who can take some starts, and you've got a guy like Brian Johnson who impressed, but I don't know that anybody really considers to be a high upside guy. And you've got a guy in Rodriguez who is awfully exciting. I mean, you know, there's this – different people have said he may have been the best minor league arm that changed hands at last year's trade deadline. He was a heck of a return for Andrew Miller, and he's a guy who's off to a tremendous start at AAA. If they start looking at that, and if they start looking at making some kind of transition, be it with Masterson, be it with Kelly, what do you think is most likely, that they go with the very young, very high upside guy, Rodriguez, who just turned 22, or do they go with one of the sort of maybe more stable but maybe less upside alternative options?
Yeah, I actually think it's kind of a combination of both. I think that for the short term, they could go with a Wright or with a Brian Johnson just to plug in and kind of see if he can get a little more, you know, some more results than you've gotten lately. And then once they deem that Eduardo Rodriguez's development is complete and he's ready, you know, this could be sometime in June or July. Then you go with him and kind of say, hey, you know, you're in the rotation the rest of the way. So I think that, you know, they're going to decide when they think Rodriguez is ready. They're not going to bring him up sooner than that. So that's the scenario where I think they could go with a Johnson or a Wright just in the very short term. And then you see Eduardo Rodriguez sort of midseason.
We've just talked about the pitching and sort of kind of been the way people have talked about the Red Sox this year, just talking about the pitching while sort of ignoring that the offense hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been what they expected either. They made another pretty striking move this week with the demotion of my man, the wrench, Alan Craig, and the recall of Jackie Bradley. What's the thought process on both sides of that, both who they send out and who they bring in? Because they're both interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think with Bradley, he gives you a left-handed bat. If he can hit maybe the way he was hitting at AAA earlier this year, he's yet to prove that he can hit in the major leagues. But if he can give you some of those quality at bats, and he gives you a really exciting dynamic on defense. And and that also has to do with Shane Victorino, where they just look at Shane Victorino right now. They don't see an everyday player. They look at a guy who, hey, if we play him against lefties only, you know, he gives us a pretty good platoon right fielder, and that would kind of be repetitive with Alan Craig, who's also a right-handed hitter. So I think that they're looking at Victorino to pair with Bradley and Holt, and even Nava if he starts to, maybe get his bat on track. So I think that's what they're thinking there. And, you know, Jackie Bradley with his defense, I mean, he's a guy who can win games with his glove. So if he gives you anything offensively, then you have a pretty nice player there. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing Bradley play a little bit in the coming days and see if he's progressed at all offensively.
How hard was it to finally make that move on Craig? I mean, this is a guy, he and Kelly were the two pieces of a big deal, two guys they were excited to get, and somebody I think a lot of people thought was a big league hitter. To send him down is obviously not something you do lightly. How tough was that decision?
Yeah, it was a tough move. It's just, you know, if the Red Sox were playing better as a team, they wouldn't have made that move. But the way they're playing as a team, they need to get better results kind of instantly, and they can no longer just kind of let guys sort of figure it out as they go. And they're hoping that, you know, Alan Craig will go back to AAA and just, you know, play every day, get the pressure off, and just get his swing mechanics back. I think when a guy struggles and has injuries for such a long period of time, maybe some bad mechanics develop and some bad habits and maybe just a loss of confidence. And look, his swing is not suited as to be a part-time player either, so he just was not a great fit on this roster. But look, there's a lot of affordable contract left in this guy beyond this year, so if you can sort of get him right again mentally and physically and let him get something together and build some momentum, maybe at least you have a good player, whether it's later this year or into next year.
Brian, because this is a weekly thing, we often drill down into the minutia, the what's going on in the last few days. But I want to start with a big picture question for you, because things are going awfully well for the Yankees right now. I believe they're 22-12. And so my question is really simple. Are you buying it? Do you buy that this team is legitimately a really good ball club?
Well, I think you don't win 18 out of your last 24 games by accident. I think that what we've talked about all year is what's come through here, and you're seeing some of the guys who didn't hit last year are coming through. I mean, it looks like Beltran is heating up a little bit. You've gotten production out of McCann, Shera. The bullpen has been as advertised. I think that there is not a better duo around the league than Dylan Betances and Andrew Miller, and the starting pitching has been good enough. So I think that a lot of the things that we talked about in February and March with this team and saying – things need to go right. If this goes right, this could happen. I think you're seeing that right now. So I am buying it. I think that the AL East is a pretty winnable division for this team. I think that on the low end, you were probably looking at an 82, 83 win team, and now they're well above that, I think. So, no, I'm buying. I think that they are definitely contenders.
One thing that has really stood out, and actually, that's kind of the way to put it. One thing that really stands out when you look at the stat sheet that has actually seemed kind of quiet, you know, there's one thing we don't talk about much with this Yankee team. It's their rotation. We talk about the bullpen. We talk about, the middle of the order hitting the ball out of the park. Yankee starters are third in the AL in innings per start, and that's after doing without Tanaka for a while. Do you think that that is sustainable?
I think at some point the fact of not having Tanaka and having Chase Whitley is going to come back to bite them. But there's help on the way. They have Ivan Nova, who's throwing in minor league games in Tampa. Chris Capuano seems about ready. He should be built up to 90 pitches after tonight and could join the team at some point in the very near future. So I think that Sabathia, as he had said, was pitching good enough to lose, and now he's got a win under his belt. If he can keep that going and they can continue getting positive starts out of guys like Nate Eovaldi and Adam Warren and these guys who Michael Pineda was dominant, I think Pineda is the real deal. I think what you're seeing is what the Yankees have been banking on for years, and so I think that it is sustainable. I think that really they need to pitch good enough to get the ball to the bullpen and let the bullpen do its job, because I think that if the Yankees have a lead after five or six innings, they feel pretty good about the chances of going home and shaking hands on the in the middle of the diamond.
You mentioned Pineda. His strikeout-to-walk ratio right now is beyond great, and if he were even to come close to that over the season, would be utterly historic. 54 strikeouts and 3 walks is just unheard of. Now, a lot of things can happen in a short period of time, and so the answer is probably just that's one of those things that happens. But his ERA is merely rather good relative to that insane strikeout-to-walk ratio. Is it just a matter of, yeah, that happens, or is there something that maybe gets a little lost in translation, be it defense, be it guys are hitting him with runners on base? Is there any reason for that disconnect, or is it just, like I said, something that happens?
I think I would venture to say it's just something that happens. I mean, he's been hitting around a little bit, but you know, the question with him has never been the stuff. I mean, the stuff is top flight, top of the rotation stuff. The question has always been, can he stay healthy enough? And you know, until last year, he hadn't even gotten on the mound for the Yankees. So I think that as long as he can stay healthy, Michael Pineda can be a huge part of this team, not just this year, but in the future as well.
Can they ride him for big-time innings? I mean, he's averaging 6 2/3 innings a start, which over a full season is 210, 220, 225 innings, depending on the number of starts. Given all he's been through, can they ask that out of him, or are they going to try to back him off at times?
Yeah, I would expect them to back off that. I think that he is part of the reason that you've heard the Yankees talking about wanting to put a 6th starter in there at times. I mean, Tanaka was a big part of that, of course, but he's not here now. So I think that if they can give Pineda a little break, as you mentioned, he's on pace to throw over 200 innings. That's something he has never done at any point in his career. So they know that they've got to take him kind of gradually and ease him into that. They certainly can't afford to lose him. So I think that if they can give him a break and call up a guy or a spot starter in there, you know, every once in a while, I think that would be big for him. But as I said, he's never surpassed 200 innings. That's something the Yankees are mindful of. They've talked about it. So I would expect him to come in close to 200 if healthy, but I don't think they're going to push him much farther than that.
Another why question in that Yankees rotation. I think this is actually something you wrote about in spring training, and it remains a really interesting topic to me. Nathan Eovaldi throws really hard, mm-hmm. and he also gives up a lot of hits. What is, again, it's kind of the same wording, what's the disconnect there between the stuff he has and the degree to which he remains hittable?
Yeah, I mean, he is living proof that you can't just throw the ball by big league hitters. These guys can hit a fastball even if it's coming in 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. So Eovaldi's got great stuff. I think that when the Yankees made the trade, they talked a lot about how he wasn't a finished product. They knew he led the National League in hits allowed last year, so this was not a secret to anybody. But I think he finds himself in the middle of the plate too much, and that's something that he and Larry Rothschild have been working on. In layman's terms, it's basically hitting the corners and keeping the ball out of the middle of the plate. And I think that's something Eovaldi has struggled with during his career. He seems to have done better at it when he's on. You've already seen evidence. Some of his Yankee starts have been pretty solid, but I think that there is still work to be done there. He's a work in progress, and the Yankees acknowledge that, but this was a move that they made not only for this year but for the future as well.
Peter Gammons wrote over the winter, and it intrigued me at the time, and I still think some about it. And I know the Yankees aren't in any hurry to do it, and if you've got a guy who can give you 200 innings, you do it. But Gammons wrote that somebody told him that Eovaldi's long-term future might be as a power late-inning reliever. And he's reasonably effective, and so you generally take failing starters, not decent starters, and put them in the bullpen. But do you think there's something to that? Do you think this is a guy whose long-term future at some point might be a dominant reliever?
I think if you put anybody in the bullpen, their stuff would play up. You've seen that. I think back to when the Yankees had Phil Hughes, and they put him in the bullpen, and he became the best reliever in the world. I think that's not something the Yankees have talked about. I haven't heard that from the team at all. I think they see him as a starting pitcher, and you know, if you can have a starting pitcher with that kind of stuff at that age who throws with that velocity and he's coming in at triple digits, 98, 99, I'm not sure why you'd want to put him in the bullpen other than that, yeah, of course he could go be a dominant 7th, 8th inning guy, but I think his value to the team would be greater as a starting pitcher.
And then we mentioned Tanaka because we can't not mention Tanaka. How is he coming along? There was some seemingly encouraging news about him recently. What's the latest with him?
Yeah, he's going to get on a mound for the first time since the injury today at Tropicana Field. And they'll see how that goes. We'll check in with them tomorrow, see if there's any soreness or discomfort. But so far, everything's been good. He's been throwing on flat ground. I know that that's just playing catch, but when you're at 120 feet or so, you are opening up your arm a little bit. So you would think that if there was going to be some kind of setback, it would have happened then. So he gets on the mound, he throws, and if that all goes well, I could see him starting the rehab process here. And he might stay with the team in Tampa. I think that this is a fortunately timed road trip for them. They can leave him here, and he can start working. But as of right now, coming back in early June still seems to be on the table.
I wanted to ask about one thing that actually isn't pitching-related before we close this out. Again, I do a lot of scouting the stats, which is not really good practice, but when you talk about 10 teams, you can't see them all every day. Brian McCann is hitting 240, slugging 400, on pace for 20 or so home runs. That's more or less what he did last year. It's a little better than he did last year, but it's more or less what he did last year. So we now have somewhere on the order of a year and a quarter that suggests maybe that's what he is. Do you think at this point maybe that's just kind of what McCann is, with the acknowledgement that in 2015, 240 with power as a catcher is a pretty good player? Do you think maybe that's just kind of what he is?
Yeah, I think he might be. And, clearly there's a sample size to prove it. I think he got off to a slow start last year. The first half was pretty awful. I don't think that's who Brian McCann was. But I think from the period after the All-Star break to now is where I would break it down. And I would take those stats and say that's probably what Brian McCann is going to be as a Yankee. I think that the one thing that jumps out to me is most of his home runs were at Yankee Stadium. He crushes the ball at Yankee Stadium. He's taking advantage of that short porch. There was a ball he hit last night here at the Trop that I think would have been out at Yankee Stadium. It was just flat to the warning track. But he has that left-handed swing to take advantage of the park where the Yankees play 81 of their home games. So I think that if you can count on him for power production and the drive-in runs, you're seeing it with Mark Teixeira to a certain extent, too. The batting average is not everything. I think that people would look at Mark Teixeira and say he's having a really solid year, and it doesn't matter what the batting average says. He's got 11 homers. So I think you can do the same thing with McCann. He's getting on base. He's helping the team. He's driving the ball when he's up there. He'll take a few 0-for-4s once in a while. He's lost hits to the shift. But I think that, if you look from around July 15 to now, that's probably what Brian McCann's going to be as a Yankee, and I think they're okay with that.
Gregor, we've been talking about Jose Bautista for a little while now. He's still not back to playing the outfield. How close is he to playing the outfield now?
He doesn't sound like he's very close, and it's been a lingering concern now for a while, and I think he's as confused about the entire situation as anybody, and he still can't throw a baseball. Until the pain goes away, there's no real timetable for when he can resume throwing. He said on Monday night, there are some days he wakes up and he can't brush his hair, and then there are other days he wakes up and he feels okay, but the pain hasn't subsided enough to allow him to start throwing. And until that pain goes away for at least a few days, he's not going to be able to start a throwing program. And even though he's not a pitcher, that's something he's still going to have to do a little bit before he can resume playing in right field. So at the very least, we're still a week away, I would think, and it's something that has the danger of continuing to linger because, while it doesn't cause him much discomfort in the batter's box while he's swinging, one thing he conceded earlier this week was that it probably doesn't do much to help speed up the recovery process. If he was able to step away for a couple weeks, it's probably something where the pain would go away, but he might not be making the situation worse by hitting, but he's certainly not making the situation better either, and that's the dilemma the Blue Jays have right now, because they obviously want his bat in the lineup, but they'd prefer to have the bat in the lineup in right field so they can do some other things at DH and at first base, and it's really kind of clogging up the entire lineup right now.
You just set up my next question, which is, are they getting close to maybe making a decision on a DL stint for him?
I wouldn't rule it out at this point. I mean, it's something that they would still like to avoid because you certainly don't want to lose his presence for 15 days. But it may eventually come to that if they don't think that this is going to improve. I mean, you simply can't have Jose Bautista DH-ing for the entire season, and this has already gone on a lot longer than they thought. Now, if they eventually do need to do a DL stint, I wouldn't be surprised if they wait a little bit before doing that. One, it gives the injury a little bit more time to see if there's any kind of improvement. Two, they might be able to wait until Jose Reyes comes back in the lineup. that would at least lessen the blow of having Batista's bat out of there. And those are kind of two things. And then the third one, the third factor would be the Blue Jays do have an interleague series coming up in Washington in early June. So if he's not able to play the field by then, you would think that it's a situation where they would probably use those that three-game series as an opportunity to take up some of those 15 days. They also have a couple off days in there. So there's a situation where you could maybe only miss his bat for 10 games instead of what otherwise might be 15. But I think they're going to take as much time as they possibly can with this. But if there's not improvement, eventually he's going to have to shut it down, because while he's performing with the bat, it just impacts too many other spots on the roster to really have this drag on and become, you know, a situation that lasts for more than a month. I mean, they've been dealing with this now since towards the end of April, and there's been no sign of improvement yet. So at some point in time, they're going to have to draw a line in the sand and probably tell Jose that he needs to take some time off in order to get better.
You mentioned Reyes. How close is he?
He's getting better. He's been taking ground balls every day. He's been hitting off the tee. The one step that he needs to take now is he's going to need to take batting practice for at least a couple days, maybe a few days, in order to really test things out. And once that eventually does happen, he's going to also need a rehab assignment for probably, you know, a couple of games. So you're probably, you know, on the current road trip, I would be surprised if he comes back. I don't think he'll be back this weekend in Houston. But it wouldn't surprise me if he's able to see some progress over the next couple of days. It wouldn't surprise me at all if when the Blue Jays return home on Monday, that he's a factor in that.
And as we go through this list, it's actually pretty remarkable. This team has a positive run differential and is very much in the mix. A limited Bautista doing without Reyes, and now without Michael Saunders again. What happened there as far as that setback, and how long are they looking to be without him this time?
Yeah, it's really disappointing for Saunders, and I think this is a case where the Blue Jays and Saunders probably won't admit this, but he probably came back a little bit too early. He said all the right things when he came back. He thought that he was fully recovered when he returned to the Blue Jays, but he just did not look himself. I mean, really from day one that he came up here, he was still kind of moving around with a noticeable limp for a little while. The discomfort in the knee never really seemed to go away, at least when he came up here. And so that caused the Blue Jays to get the knee had to be drained. They gave him a cortisone shot. They hoped that would happen, or they hoped that would help. And he sat out for four games, really kind of giving that a little bit extra time. He only returned for one game after that, though. And while he did look like he was moving around a little bit better in that one game, he did make one nice catch in left field. It still didn't look like the Michael Saunders that people have been used to seeing. And he wasn't moving around the way he did while he was in Seattle. So, this is a situation where he clearly wasn't himself, and now he's going to need to take at least the 15 days to really let everything heal properly. But it's yet another blow to what has become kind of a nightmare start to his Blue Jays tenure.
It's really amazing. I think we're going to spend the entire 10 minutes here talking about things that are wrong with the Blue Jays. And yet again, they're having a pretty good year in the final result. Ari Dickey, has he moved from being, I wonder what's going on there, to being a full-on concern?
I would say not quite yet, only because the start this year is still pretty similar to the way he started each of the last 2 years. This one seems to be dragging on a little bit more, but the home runs have always been a concern. He said the other day that, you know, he's getting tired of coming out after games early on in the first couple months of the season and saying, you know, he was one pitch away from a quality start. But that's really been the case for him so far during the early going in each of those years that he's been in Toronto. It's that it seems that whether it's something happens in the first inning or something happens towards the end of a start in the sixth or seventh where, you know, it's been the home run. I mean, this is a guy who's given up more home runs than anyone in baseball since 2013. That issue's not going away anytime soon, but the good news for him is that in each of the last 2 years, he was kind of able to turn it on towards the end of May and had pretty good results after that. Now, the one big concern, at least in my mind, is that the swing and miss knuckleball hasn't been there, and I think he's searching for answers as to why that is. But, I mean, over his last four starts, he has four strikeouts, and that's just not something you expect from him, and there's been some cases where the knuckleball just hasn't been moving quite the way it was. He compared it a little bit to his time with the Mets in 2010 and 2011, where his strikeout numbers were down in those years, at least early on. But he still put up some pretty good numbers with that. But he knows that he needs that swing and miss knuckleball in order to really be effective. And that's something that he's still searching for answers for. And he doesn't really have them right now. As we all know, it's a very unpredictable pitch. It's something that he's hoping to figure out, and it's something that he's going to need. Otherwise, as you said, I mean, there's no doubt that it would be a concern if he doesn't find that pitch once again.
Yeah, I mean, you beat me to it. I mean, that's just not even with an unusual pitch, even with an unusual repertoire, more home runs than strikeouts is not a feasible way to pitch in the big leagues. I mean, you can sort of say, I don't know what's going on, but to your eye, to anybody's eye, what is – he could say he doesn't know what's going on. What does it look like? What is missing for a guy to strike out 16 in his first three starts and four in his next four?
Well, the movement just hasn't been as good. I mean, there's been a couple of starts where the knuckleball just hasn't been moving the way it was in the past. And, you know, there was one start in there where he didn't strike anybody out, but he still went eight innings and had a very good start. In that particular case, it was moving pretty well, and I think that was more of a case of a team taking a very aggressive approach in the box and swinging early and often, and he generated a lot of weak contact, generated a lot of ground balls. So that start went well, and you can live with that. But when teams are taking a patient approach with him, which is what a lot of teams seem to do, you know, you need that movement on the knuckleball, and there's just been too many flat ones so far over the last few starts that's really come back to haunt him. And that's what we've also seen with the home run when, you know, he kind of throws one up there and it doesn't move a whole heck of a lot. You know, hitters can really tee off on that. And they've been teeing off on him lately a lot more than he's used to.
Brett, the Orioles are finally back home after a trip. Three city trips happen, but three city trips when you're not expecting a three city trip are certainly a challenge. How tough, just sort of physically and mentally, putting aside the baseball side, you were with the club. How tough was that trip for the Orioles?
It was draining. I mean, it was really draining for me, and all I do is watch them play baseball. So I can't really imagine how it felt. You know, they spent that final week in New York. They had the Tampa series. And, you know, there's something about being on the schedule, and they're very much creatures of habit. I think the Tampa series, even though they took two of three, you know, was just tiring, you know. And then they go to New York, and they don't play well at Citi Field, and they weren't able to get anything going consistently against the Yankees in New York. So they're very glad to be home. Obviously got the win last night. I think they're hopeful that the worst part of the season, the worst part of what this city has seen here is over.
What do you expect this next few days at home to be like? I mean, there was a big deal last night about welcoming the club back home. Does it have the potential to kind of be a recharging thing for them, even if, I mean, they're still playing ball. It's not like they get a rest, but to kind of, like I said, recharge?
Yeah, I think so. Fans kind of unofficially dubbed yesterday reopening day. The club had white Baltimore uniforms made up specifically for that, and they could really feel the energy going through the ballpark. So I think it could certainly energize them. They're always a team that is fed off of the crowd. Baltimore's always been such a proud baseball city that certainly the two are intertwined. And I think it meant a lot last night to fans to see Buck Showalter, who I don't think I've ever seen in anything but his black Orioles jacket, actually wearing the team's jersey. So that was big. You know how important it was. And again, kind of cool to see fans get this initiative going and really encourage people to pack Camden Yards.
Talking baseball now. I had it on my list for a couple of weeks now to talk about Ubaldo Jimenez. And he's a guy who's been very good at times in his career. So, excuse me, it's not like he's never been good before, but he's found it again. Does anybody, including Ubaldo, know what happens when he finds it or what happens when it goes away?
I think what happened with him this year in terms of how he was able to find it, a lot of the credit goes to Ramon Martinez, you know, Pedro's brother. You don't hear a whole lot about him, but he really helped Ubaldo, and he's pitching like a more confident guy. And really, it comes down to mechanics with him. Really, what he says since day one, if he doesn't have it, it's because he's having trouble repeating that delivery. not an easy delivery to repeat. He's a tall guy, a big wingspan. Simplifying it and eliminating that overhead really helped him out a lot. And I think he really benefited from having a good spring, having a few good starts in a row. Now, mentally, it's such a big aspect of the game when you get to this level. Everybody is talented. So I think when he's going good, because mentally he's in a good place, and physically he's able to repeat that delivery. And that's what you're seeing more often than not this season.
Right. I mean, that's sort of the, from the mechanical standpoint, from the just purely execution standpoint, it does seem like he's a guy who kind of loses his delivery and finds it again. And I remember you mentioning in the spring some attempt to simplify his motion. Is that something he's stuck to? Is that part of what's going on here?
Yeah, like I said, he eliminated that overhead, which, you know, just getting the ball and not putting his gloves, hands over his head, I think has helped him kind of stay in line, not get quite as out of whack. And that's been big for him. Yeah, he adopted it right around September of last year. And he pitched, if you go back and look, he pitched pretty well out of the bullpen there late in the season. So this is something that he's been quietly and diligently working on. He really took to it. You can't force a guy to do something. They really felt like watching video of him last year, and the best way to get him right was to change his delivery back to what he had when he was first starting out in the minor league.
Well, we can now. Earlier in the year, we couldn't talk about Ubaldo Jimenez without also talking about Kevin Gausman. Those guys have certainly gone different directions. Gausman's now in the DL. It doesn't sound like there's a whole – people are sort of saying the right things now. What's your understanding of where Gausman is at? Is this a big worry or a little worry?
I think I'll have a much clearer idea after today. You know, he's getting an MRI. He saw the team orthopedist yesterday. They're calling it tendonitis, but – you know, certainly there are cases where you find something on that MRI that's troubling. So that's why they're getting it done. They want to know what they're dealing with. And if it's only tendonitis, I think this is actually a good thing for Kevin Gausman. They've already talked about sending him down at AAA, getting him some starts, having him be used more consistent, and this could be a good avenue for that. Get him some rest, keep his innings in check, and then get him back on a regular starting routine and have him be an option for the Orioles at some point to that rotation at some point this season. So as long as the MRI he gets today comes back and they don't really see anything to dip against, I think it's a minor bump in the road for Kevin Gausman.
It is. We've talked about the bullpen and talked about how this is not exactly the same sort of setup of a bullpen they've had in recent years. Gausman's such a hard guy to sort of pin down just because he presumably would be, if healthy, one of their seven best relievers, but at the same time, you know, obviously, nobody goes through the season with five healthy starters and nothing else. It almost never happens. So how do they weigh that balance once he comes back between, as you mentioned and as has been reported a few times, maybe having him build back up and start in the minors or returning him to the big league bullpen?
Well, first and foremost, it's going to have to do with what the major league club's needs are. If they need a reliever versus they need a starter. But I think the Orioles, all things being equal, realize that Kevin Gausman being a starting option is going to help this club a lot more than occasionally using him out of the bullpen. So if they don't have Gausman in the bullpen, they can use that spot as an optionable spot, moving guys back and forth, a guy like T.J. McFarland is with them now, give them some length. So that's something they haven't really had, so they could really use that to their own advantage in terms of flexibility. Now, this rotation has been inconsistent at best, particularly Bud Norris, so I think that, you know, as soon as somebody slips up, as soon as they need a little bit of a shot in the arm, having Kevin Gausman added to the rotation could be a huge acquisition for them. Kind of like a mid-season deal that they really don't need to obviously do anything. So all things being considered, I think Kevin Gausman's going to end up in this rotation. It might take until July. It might be a little bit sooner. It's going to depend on the needs of the club. But long-term, they don't want to keep fooling around with him. They don't want to keep yanking him back and forth. And it's getting to the point now where or in mid-May, he's far enough away from starting. He hasn't started his spring training that he wouldn't even be an option for them. They'd have to stretch him back out, which I think is what they're going to end up doing with the DL today.
All right. Looking elsewhere around this roster, I noticed one of the most interesting numbers to me on this Oriole team so far is that Manny Machado has drawn 13 walks, among a lot of other things going well. I mean, he's really been hot lately. He's hitting the ball well. But he has never been a guy who walked at all, not even just an aggressive hitter, but a guy who just didn't walk, something like 29 times in his one full season. I obviously they're not going to tell a guy to go up there and be passive, and they're certainly not going to tell an aggressive hitter to go up there and be passive. But is this by design? Is this something where he is trying to work that in more, trying to be a little more selective?
I don't think so. He hasn't directly mentioned it. Certainly, it's a byproduct of seeing the ball well. You hear all the time from guys that when they're going well, the game starts to slow down a little bit, and with that, you become a little bit more selective. And I think that's what's happening a little bit with Manny Machado. You know, you look at his average, you look at what he's been able to do this season. Like you said, he's not going up there looking to walk, hoping to walk. But again, he's seeing the ball so well that he's been able to be selective. And he's had a really good offensive start to the season. I'm a little concerned with the fact that he leads the team with 7 errors. And it just seems like if another player had 7 errors, we'd be talking about what was wrong with their defense. But with Manny Machado, it kind of gets swept under the rug in some aspect. I think that's a little more concerning when you talk about Manny and things that I've seen from him for the first month and a half.
So what are you seeing from him defensively?
You know, it's almost like he's trying to make routine plays a little fancier than they are. And of those 7 errors, I would guess about 4 or 5 have been really costly. They have allowed runs to come at a pivotal point of the game. And it's interesting because, like I said, if Jimmy Parisi said 7 errors, me and you would be talking about whether or not he could still stay in the lineup, or Chris Davis, or Adam Jones. People would wonder if he was really had his head in the game. And Manny Machado has 7 errors, and I don't think too many people realize that. I think there's a lot of goodwill in this city and around baseball built up toward Manny Machado. But, you know, I know internally it's something the Orioles want to lock down, something they want to fix, especially given that they've now got shortstop J.J. Hardy back. They've really got to cut back on some of the sloppy play that you saw in New York this past week if they're going to be able to compete.
One last thing. Matt Wieters is apparently catching almost a full game today in extended spring training. We talk about him every week, but we kind of have to talk about every week because it continues to be an ongoing situation. Where does he stand? Is he getting close to maybe going on at least a rehab assignment, or what's the situation with him?
Yeah, he's getting close. He still has to get back-to-back games. If he doesn't get back-to-back games, then they can't possibly think about sending him out on rehab. So he is catching 8 innings today. They're hoping for 9 Thursday and Saturday. And then the next step after that is he has to be able to go back-to-back. So you're not going to see him until at least June. They moved him to the 60-day DL yesterday. So they're going to hope that he's a player for them at all before this first half ends. But there's no rush here on Matt Wieters until Joseph is playing well. They want him back right. But certainly this is taking longer than anyone envisioned this spring.
Bill, we talked, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks ago, about how maybe the Rays had finally weathered the storm, how things were about to start turning the right way, and I think the lesson is never, ever say anything like that. Since then, things have gone very much the wrong direction, starting with Alex Cobb, who is going to be out for the remainder of the year. How exactly did that come together? Do they think he was dealing with the elbow ligament issue all along, or was this something that came up as he rehabbed? How did that sort of come to happen?
The way they explained it is the initial injury, which was elbow tendonitis, somehow clouded the MRI and the look at what the bigger problem was, which is the torn, you know, you ulnar collateral ligament. So once that cleared up, a subsequent MRI revealed that. I guess they were able to see it a little more clear. And of course, the next one was the one where they had the I think they call it an arthrogram, where they inject dye, and it's a little more intrusive. That's why they don't do that first time out of the gate. You know, that's why they kind of just go slowly and plod along on the thing. But a clear tear was shown, and that's when Cobb hesitated just a little bit, and then he said, you know what, I got to get this thing done.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of we're in this weird thing now where because of the advances in coverage of injuries and the degree to which we're sort of all better at having some understanding, there are these sort of armchair orthopedists, and I'm sure I've been guilty of it as well, sort of say, oh, yeah, the guy's got to get the surgery. This is not a decision that's lightly taken, even when it's a significant tear, is it? I mean, this is something that we sort of, Tommy John, I'll be back in a year, it's routine, but this is a tough decision, even when it's pretty clear, isn't it?
Well, one of the great quotes in sports was, it's always routine surgery until it's yours.
So, exactly, yeah.
I think that does make it a little more difficult. And you know, there is, you know, you think back in the day, they probably pitched through these things and then it went and then they were done with their careers. I'm not sure how much more damage he could have done had he continued to pitch, although we do know that that would have delayed his eventual, you know, return to full top form. So I think that was probably the big thing in there. But wow, what a blow! Because this guy, he's had so much tough luck. I mean, he has been knocking on the door of being a number one type pitcher for the past 3 years, and he's had whether he got hit in the head with a line drive last year, he had an oblique. First year, he had a blood clot in his shoulder. He's dealt with something just about every year, but I will tell you one thing, that is one tough kid, and I would fully expect him to be totally back. There was kind of an odd symmetry to it last week, though, when we're talking to talking to Cobb, and he's telling us, he's getting ready to do the Tommy John, which is 14 months normally, and then out on the mound just behind us, Matt Moore, who's in the latter stages of the Tommy John. So that if there is a good thing in the Rays camp, it's, they can look forward to having more of that.
And that's sort of the thing here, is that with Cobb going down, they sort of knew all along that Moore was on the way back. They've been encouraged with Moore's progress. And if you had to do a month or two in between those guys, it wouldn't be ideal, but it seemed manageable. If they had to do without Cobb, they were getting Moore back. You slot him back in, and it's all right. That's now drastically complicated by whatever it is that Drew Smyly is dealing with. First, what exactly is Smiley's situation? What is his injury, and how long are they looking at being without him?
Well, right now, it's my understanding it's a torn, a labrum tear. And in most cases, again, you're talking about armchair surgeons. In most cases, it would seem that would dictate surgery. Shoulder surgery is really never a good thing. I mean, elbow surgery is one thing. Shoulder surgery, is more of a, there's more moving parts. The elbow is more like a hinge, and then the shoulder is more of a circular type thing. So they've not told us that he's having surgery yet. He looked great last week when he pitched in Boston, although I think his velocity was down a little bit. Anyway, the short end of the thing is they're kind of in a fix now.
And to top it all off, Chris Archer, who was absolutely dominant, as good as any pitcher in the American League the first month of the year, has back-to-back ugly starts, 8 walks in his last 2 starts, 9 runs in 9 innings. And I think as much as anything, at least from the outside, it really is those walks that are worrisome. I mean, he's a guy who the difference for him between when he's been exciting but not necessarily great and his step towards greatness is control, is throwing strikes. What have you seen from him these last couple of starts as he's to some extent lost the strike zone a little bit?
Well, you nailed it right there, because he has the kind of stuff where guys swing and miss if he's in the strike zone. So he knows that. Sometimes these guys will get to where it's almost like, for whatever reason, they kind of fall outside of that groove and they nibble a little bit instead of, using the stuff, particularly a guy like he has, and just trusting the stuff in the strike zone. And I think that's kind of been the case the past two outings. I would look for him to make a nice rebound. But it did all come in a wave, though, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just bad timing. I mean, it's at a time when they really kind of need not only the performance, but it seems like this is a time when they just kind of really need a good feeling. They need somebody to step up and say, hey, not even so much literally, but kind of figuratively with a performance, say, hey, we're good. We're going to be all right. And he's had a rough time. When he gets out of that, is it a mechanical thing? Is it an approach thing? When Chris Archer goes from throwing a lot of strikes to throwing fewer strikes, what do you see as the difference there?
Mostly, I think it's just a little bit of an adjustment. It's such a – I mean, I think when you throw as hard as he does, it's a lot easier to for that thing to get away than it is maybe for other pitchers. So it comes down to a little bit of a feel, a little bit of a mechanical issue, and probably a little bit about what's going on in between his ears. So, but he is a confident guy, and I don't think he'll be affected at all by the past two starts.
So, assuming that Archer is himself, and again, I'm with you, I think there's reason to think guys periodically have bad starts. I think there's reason to think he'll be fine. But down two starters, where does this leave them in the rotation? What do they do with the back of the rotation? What do they do with the middle of the rotation for a team that's put itself in position as having a chance to contend after the first month? What do they do about making sure that that rotation is good enough for them to stay in the mix?
Well, right now they've got that dangling fifth spot, and what they did with that Saturday night was they brought up Matt Andrews and Andrew Bellotti, and right now they're down a position player. So the danger in this thing is that their bullpen is very good, and all of a sudden you start having this one night, one turnout every time around, where you need to, where you're only going to get 3.5-4 innings out of your starter. Your bullpen can take a pretty big hit, and they do have a good bullpen, but a good bullpen can only take so much. So that's going to be the balancing act, and I really don't see a guy they can bring up from the minor leagues that's going to patch this thing. Maybe Andrees or Bellotti can step up, and they can expand their pitch count and go deeper into the game. But right now, Bellotti looked really good the other night. He got the win Saturday night, but it is, it's a tough problem. They're going to have to juggle that at least until Moore gets back.
And with Matt Moore, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, they are encouraged. It does look good. Where is he at right now? Is there a time frame for him at least to start an actual rehab assignment? Where is he in his progress towards getting back on a big league mound?
I believe he had two more bullpens where he threw to live, or two more batting practices where he threw to live, three hitters. And then I think they'll start making up a schedule for him to, and that's provided every time he comes back from that, he feels all right. But he is on every 5 days right now. So after those two stints, if he feels good after that, I think you'll start seeing him begin his rehab.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.